Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's reading of the Greeley Tribune. Today is Tuesday, January 6th, 2026. First Tuesday of the new year. Let me be one of the last to wish you a happy new year. My name is Mike Fearberg. Here are some of the stories we'll be reading for you this hour. Children's Hospital Colorado and Denver Health both pause gender-affirming care for minors again. One of the euthanized mountain lions in the woman's death in Larimer County had human DNA on its paws. How CU Boulder's student news site got taken over by AI slop. Summit Flight Training helps flyers take to the sky. And work along 23rd Avenue and 5th Street in Greeley is likely to cause delays. Our top story in the Greeley Tribune this Tuesday, Children's Hospital Colorado and Denver Health both pause gender-affirming care for minors again. Children's Hospital Colorado and Denver Health have suspended gender-affirming hormonal treatments for minors again, though transgender youth can still get care in Colorado from providers that do not rely on federal funds. Marty Moore, CEO of Rocky Mountain Equality, said youth can still seek care from other providers, though hospitals have had to limit their offerings to behavioral health support. The Trump administration has threatened to cut Medicare and Medicaid payments for all patients for all types of care, which would be financially crippling to hospitals. Gender-affirming care for young people is still legal in the state of Colorado, Moore said. Children's and Denver Health confirmed last week that they would not write new prescriptions or renew existing ones for puberty blockers or hormones for gender-affirming purposes. Puberty blockers for children experiencing unusually early sexual development remain available. Neither hospital performed gender-affirming surgeries on people under 18. On December 18th, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. issued a declaration that gender-affirming care is neither safe nor effective, with a threat to cut Medicare and Medicaid payments to any hospitals providing that type of care. The public comment period will last through February 17th, meaning the proposed rules and any penalties will not take effect until later this year. The HHS review of gender-affirming care also concluded that available evidence cannot support determinations regarding the effectiveness of medical and surgical interventions for mental health or alleviating gender dysphoria symptoms, the declaration said. The review states that pediatric medical transition evidence for benefit remains highly uncertain, while harm evidence demonstrates less uncertainty. Attorney General Phil Weiser announced on December 23rd that Colorado would join a multi-state lawsuit challenging Kennedy's declaration for allegedly failing to follow rulemaking procedures and intruding on states' regulation of medical care. The federal government has used Medicare funding as a cudgel to get hospitals to follow its priorities before, including as a way to force desegregation of wards in the program's early years. While hospitals technically don't have to accept patients covered by Medicare and Medicaid, operating without the two programs would be practically impossible. Major medical groups endorse allowing puberty blockers and gender-affirming hormone therapy as options for youth who are distressed by the difference between their identities and their biological sex, a condition known as gender dysphoria. Both Metro Denver hospitals issued statements that they had to suspend gender-affirming hormone therapy to avoid the risk of losing payments from Medicare and Medicaid, while they await the outcome of a court battle between federal officials and the 19 states which sued the federal government. These changes, which are made necessary by the actions of HHS, substantially affect access to critical health services, Denver Health said in its statement. We are taking the appropriate steps to ensure our patients and families have the information they need at this time. Children's Hospital in Aurora said its gender-affirming care center would continue offering mental health care and other support to patients under 18, but that the hospital could not risk its federal funding while the legal landscape is uncertain. Both hospitals suspended gender-affirming hormonal therapy for minors in early 2025 in response to a Trump administration order threatening to cut federal funding from hospitals that provide it, then reinstated their programs after a federal judge blocked that order. Children's is also fighting a subpoena from the U.S. Department of Justice for transgender patients' records, including identifying information such as names and Social Security numbers. Courts have thrown out similar requests in other states. HHS officials announced last week they would refer Children's Hospital Colorado and Seattle Children's Hospital to the Office of the Inspector General for investigation of previous gender-affirming care. Typically, the Inspector General investigates schemes defrauding Medicare, improper payments, such as to insurance companies to cover Medicaid members who had died, and whether states are doing adequate oversight of providers within their borders. Children's described the referral as a significant escalation by federal officials, which made continuing to provide gender-affirming care legally risky. We recognize the anxiety and grief that this continued uncertainty around access to gender-affirming care creates for those who have shown unwavering dedication and commitment to supporting children in embracing their true selves, the hospital said in a statement. We continue to believe that all families, including the families of transgender children, should have the ability to seek and receive the expert medical care that their child needs to thrive. One of the euthanized mountain lions in a woman's death had human DNA on its paws. Human DNA was found on the paws of one of the lions that was killed after authorities searched for the animals involved in the New Year's Day death of a Fort Collins woman near Estes Park. Colorado Parks and Wildlife shared initial necropsy reports on Monday. They show that one of the euthanized lions, an approximately 12-month-old male, had human DNA on all four of its paws, the press release stated. The other euthanized lion was an approximately 12-month-old female. I am thoroughly convinced that lion was involved in the attack, said Mark Leslie, regional manager for Colorado Park and Wildlife's Northeast region. He said that during a Monday evening news conference about the necropsy results. Initial results also showed that the male was in good body condition and had no signs of organ abnormalities, the press release stated. Both mountain lions tested negative for rabies and other neurological diseases, according to CPW spokeswoman Kara Van Hoos during the press conference. The male subadult lion, which describes lions older than kittens but not yet of breeding age, was shot by an officer near the incident area but ran off, according to the press release. Officers tracked that lion and the female, which was also seen in the area. In the press conference, Colorado Parks and Wildlife mammal researcher Matt Aldridge said that the recent mountain lion incidents, including the attack last Thursday, and numerous other encounters reported since October, are not abnormal. We've seen a lot of situations over time where we get repeated sightings of individuals in certain areas and repeated incidences, Aldridge said, adding that research shows that mother mountain lions with kittens are more likely to prey on dogs and be in closer proximity to humans because it provides steadier access to resources. He added that although mountain lions are reclusive and subadults spend a lot of time without their mothers, they do often come together as a family, hence the sightings of more than one mountain lion at a time, he said. There were multiple reports of mountain lion sightings near Glen Haven made to Colorado Parks and Wildlife since October, including reports of a few dogs that were attacked and killed by lions. Van Hoos said the amount of reports was consistent with prior years, adding that mountain lions follow deer and elk to lower elevations during colder months. The rash of mountain lion attacks began October 28th when a mountain lion attacked and killed a dog in the 2000 block of McGraw Ranch Road in Estes Park, according to the press release. The next day, a mountain lion in Larimer County on West Creek Road attacked and killed a woman's dog, Van Hoos said during the press conference. A Glen Haven man, Gary Messina, was rushed by a mountain lion on the Crozier Mountain Trail on November 11, 2025, but successfully fought off the animal, according to the Associated Press. In the Monday press release, CPW detailed a similar incident, but stated it occurred on November 12th. The reporter Herald was unable to confirm which date was correct. After the November attack, temporary signs warning of increased mountain lion activity were posted on the trail, but they were removed after a few weeks, according to the press release. Permanent signage with information on how to report mountain lion sightings and encounters are placed at the trailhead, Van Hoos said during the press conference. She could not confirm whether signage is placed throughout the trail. Later that month, November 30th, 2025, a man and woman hiking near the Crozier Mountain Trail summit reported they saw two mountain lions in front of them, but were able to successfully haze the lions by yelling and throwing rocks, according to the press release. Temporary signage was again placed at the trailhead after that incident. Days before Christmas, a man living on County Road 43 in Glen Haven reported that a mountain lion attacked his dog in his yard. The man shot and killed the 3-year-old adult male mountain lion, and necropsy results showed that the lion did not have any abnormalities, according to the press release. Colorado Parks and Wildlife biologists do not believe that lion was apparent to the subadults euthanized after the New Year's Day attack, according to the press release. The man was not cited for killing the lion, according to the press release. None of the incidents that happened before New Year's Day's attack was announced until yesterday. Van Hoos said CPW does not have a policy around alerting the public about non-fatal attacks on humans or any attacks on animals. Earlier Monday, the woman who was killed was identified by the Larimer County Coroner's Office as 46-year-old Kristen Marie Kovach of Fort Collins. The autopsy revealed that her injuries were consistent with a mountain lion attack, and her cause of death was asphyxia due to external neck compression, according to the release. Hikers on the Crozier Mountain Trail, south of Glen Haven, spotted a mountain lion near Kovach, who was lying on the ground, at about 12:15 p.m. last Thursday. The hikers could not find a pulse. "Our hearts go out to the victim's family," Leslie, the CPW regional manager, stated in a press release on Monday. "This is a terrible tragedy. This hiker did what many people did on New Year's Day. She went out in nature on the first day of a new year, and the fact that she did not return to her family and friends is nothing short of heartbreaking. We encourage the public to have compassion and empathy for her and her loved ones." Authorities had been searching for a third mountain lion in the area, but ended that effort yesterday morning. Van Hoos wrote in an emailed statement, "CPW officers believe a family of lions was responsible for the attack due to the presence of multiple lions at the scene. But during a press conference last night, Colorado Parks and Wildlife staff members said they did not know if the third lion near the scene was a mother or another sibling." Also on Monday, U.S. Forest Service officials announced the Garden Gate, Gravel Pit, and Piper Meadows trailheads around Crozier Mountain were reopened after being closed for multiple days following the attack. During the press conference, Van Hoos urged reporting mountain lion sightings and encounters as soon as possible, adding it allows CPW officers to take swift action in locating mountain lions. "We just want to know. We are a data agency, so all data is good data to us," Van Hoos said. "Tell us. Tell us early and often." Colorado Parks and Wildlife offered a few tips in the press release for living with mountain lions, including being aware of your surroundings, recreating in groups, and keeping children between adults, making sure dogs are on a leash, and being prepared to fight back. How CU Boulder's student news site got taken over by AI slop. Google, the CU Independent, the student news outlet that covers the University of Colorado Boulder, and the first result, CUIndependent.com, is a copycat website churning out what appears to be AI slop with headlines like, "Why does my itchy scalp itch a day after washing?" The second result, CUIndependent.org, is the legitimate news site run by dozens of CU Boulder student journalists who take photographs and write articles about local sports, student government, arts and culture, and campus goings-on. Their website warns that the news organization is not affiliated with CUIndependent.com. That's the web address that CU Independent had used since 2009. The imposter site is confusing readers with the articles that appear to be generated by artificial intelligence and is siphoning page views from real student reporting, the CUI's journalists say. They've spent hundreds of dollars of their own money to try to fix the problem, enlisted lawyers, and even tried to get the Colorado Bureau of Investigation involved. Students built an entirely new website. That's the version now found at CUIndependent.org over last summer, in hopes of disentangling themselves from the old one. In my time as editor-in-chief, I would love to spend more time working on our reporting than trying to fix this website that is impersonating us, said Greta Kirchhoff, who is serving as the CUI's editor-in-chief this academic year. The CUI has no official connection to the university's journalism program, but Department Chair Patrick Ferrucci said the faculty wishes the student publication's editorial staff success as it works to resolve what he called an unfortunate situation. Online AI-generated content can be inauthentic and misleading and should not be confused with high-quality community journalism, professional ethics, and editorial standards, and the skills of dedicated journalists honing their craft at CU Boulder and at other colleges and universities, Ferrucci said in a statement. When a reporter from the Denver Post messaged the imposter site asking who was behind it, the emailed response ignored the question entirely, instead offering prices from $149 to $299 that could be paid for articles with quick link integration into content that's already resonating with our audience. Nobody knows who's running the knockoff site, which claims to be an evolution of CU Boulder's student-run campus news outlet, with roots dating back to 1978. The site purports to still be the CUI, but in its words, a little bit different. Our team believes in the freedom to speak, feel, and explore who we are, the imposter website says on its About page. We still honor what CU Independent stood for: strong voices, independent thought, and stories that matter. You will see new faces and new sections, but the heart stays the same. The website lists seemingly fictitious writers and advisors alongside what appear to be AI-generated photos and author biographies. Some of those bios claim the site's journalists, who are supposed to be college students gaining experience, are seasoned reporters with more than a dozen years of experience in the journalism industry. A Google search of those reporters' names did not turn up any results elsewhere. In at least one case, the image of a real journalist is used. The imposter CUI website features a bio of a writer named Avery Quinn that includes a photo of real-life Czech journalist Pavla Holkova, an image taken from the documentary The Killing of a Journalist. As the site located at their longtime web address keeps posting new AI-generated articles that have nothing to do with CU, the student journalists say they are at their wits' end. Above all, they worry about their journalistic reputation being tarnished. It is clearly being done by someone who knows every legal loophole, said Jessica Sachs, the CUI's editor-in-chief, during last year's academic year and a current CU Boulder journalism student. It feels incredibly malicious. How did a rogue website become the bane of these students' existence? Well, the answer is not really clear, but years of unorganized cybersecurity management likely contributed to the situation, Sachs said. Since the CUI website's inception, the publication, then still named the Campus Press, went online only in 2006. A revolving door of college students had access to the various passwords and permissions for the publication's WordPress content management system without much organization or documentation. It was kind of a security nightmare, Sachs said. I made it my mission to fix everything as much as I could. Last year, during Sachs' tenure as editor-in-chief, she said the CUIndependent.com domain registration was about to expire, but nobody knew who the original account holder was or had the password needed to renew the account. Sachs said she went back five or six generations of editors-in-chief, but could not find the keeper of the domain. For years, she said, the entire website went down, sometimes for as little as 24 to 48 hours, whenever the registration lapsed, only to come back after the unknown account holder paid the bill. That was way too stressful, Sachs said. To avoid the drama, Sachs enlisted the help of a computer science freshman who spent last summer building a replica of the CUI website, along with its archives, at the cuindependent.org address. The students thought they had solved their problems. The new website was up and running. The old site vanished for about 9 months. But when Kirchhoff took over as CUI editor-in-chief this academic year, the old .com address came roaring back. Someone had apparently bought up the expired web address. The current site, like many web pages, is registered anonymously through GoDaddy. The old domain featured what appeared to be AI-generated content on a website posting as the student news outlet. Articles on the impersonator site range from "How many albums does Drake have?" to "Why does my hair hurt when I move it in another direction?" to "Is Freddie Highmore actually autistic?" The fake site initially used the real CUI's trademark logo and linked to the news organization's social media pages. But whoever was behind it eventually made their own logo and created fake CUI Instagram and Facebook pages, rendering Kirchhoff's attempt to report trademark abuse moot. Whoever is doing this seems to have a good understanding of media law because they narrowly scrape by with what they can get away with, Kirchhoff said. Kirchhoff said she spent her own money hiring a domain broker to try and buy back the .com site to no avail. Out of options, she contacted the Student Press Law Center, which connected her with a lawyer. Attorney Alexandra Bass, who's representing the student newsroom, said copycat websites are becoming increasingly common, and the rise of AI further contributes to the chaos. This can be particularly harmful to student newsrooms, whose staff often changes from year to year, Bass said in a statement. Student newsrooms should consider designating a person responsible for domain maintenance and implementing a documented process to manage their domains amid transitions. Copycat news sites use AI to mass-produce content quickly, generating revenue from ads and affiliate links, Bass said. It isn't easy to prove the imposter site is generating money, which is why Kirchhoff said the Colorado Bureau of Investigation's Business Fraud Unit could not take on the case. Bass advised the student journalist to document instances of public confusion and file a uniform domain name dispute resolution policy complaint to have the copycat site taken down and ideally get the domain transferred back to them. The CUI is in the process of filing such a complaint, student editors said, and they have reported the fraudulent website to nearly every entity they can imagine. The fight, though, has even impacted the CUI's new .org site. The student reporter's new site has experienced intermittent problems with security pop-ups and blocked access for some visitors. When Kirchhoff brought the issue to World Press, she said employees with the content management system told her the CUI site was secure. She believes the repeated reports made by CUI staff against the imposter website are being misattributed to the .org address, triggering those error messages. Jonathan Gaston Falk, an attorney with the Student Press Law Center, said the CU Boulder students' case and others involving AI are difficult to pursue because it's hard to find an actual human or legal entity against whom to lodge grievances like copyright infringement. That is increasingly difficult when the lines are blurred as to who is actually running or managing some of these websites, Gaston Falk said. We're very proud of these student journalists who are stepping up not only to report it, but to protect their intellectual property. The student leader, Kirchhoff, has been absolutely dogged in trying to protect her and her newsroom's rights here, so we're very happy about that. Summit Flight Training helps flyers take to the sky. Summit Flight Training opened October 30, 2021, at 722 Airport Road at the Greeley-Weld County Airport. Since then, many have taken to the sky with what they have learned, from weekend hobby pilots to more than a few now working at major airlines. Co-owner and general manager Jason Edmonds recently spoke with the Greeley Tribune about how Summit Flight Training has grown since its beginning 4 years ago, and how, for Summit, customer service is the name of the game. Corey Griffin and Andrew Chung, the two original owners, had done some flight training at another school in northern Colorado, and once they had all their ratings, essentially felt they could do things different and better. So they leased the hangar, and the ball started rolling. In September of 2022, I started working here as the operations manager. Then, in June of 23, they approached me about becoming the third owner. We are a full-service flight school, and we tailor to all levels of flight experience, from 0 hours all the way up to someone who just may want a refresher course. If somebody just wants to be a weekend flyer, we can train him to be a weekend pilot. If somebody wants to be a professional pilot and fly for one of the legacy airlines, we can get you to the point of knocking on their door for your interview. I think our business model is what sets us apart from most other places. We pay attention and cater to people. When people call, we answer the phone. When people come to the door, we are here. We want to make flying as accessible to folks as possible. What was a significant moment or event for Summit Flight Training? Well, it's hard to nail down just one. The place has grown from just two people to now maintaining about 80 students. We've been able to purchase two new planes, but I would say the fly-in event we've done for the past 2 years. No matter what your level of aviation is, there's a little something for everybody to do. You get to see cool planes, meet people, and hang out. We also believe it's brought a lot of awareness to the airport. Because there are people that have lived in Greeley their whole lives and didn't even know the airport exists 2 miles outside of town. What drives your success? Customer service, hands down. I know from the number of students that come in here saying we've called seven other flight schools throughout northern Colorado and nobody gave us the attention you guys have given us. So it's all about customer service. Goals for the future? We would like to get at least one of these other hangars where there may be some opportunities in the next couple of years and move in a complete maintenance shop that would be a subsidiary of Summit Flight Training. We've already got a killer maintenance guy. Put him in there and he can do all of our repairs there, plus all the other stuff he does around the airport. Summit Flight Training's offerings include discovery flights, private pilot training, instrument rating training, commercial pilot training, certified flight instructor training, multi-engine rating, and mountain flying. They're at 722 Airport Road in Greeley. Now a little news about a different kind of transport. If you're driving along 23rd Avenue in North Greeley for the next several weeks, you should expect delays there. Construction at the intersection of 23rd Avenue and 5th Street will heavily impact traffic, according to a Greeley Police Department Facebook post. From 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., drivers will see lanes reduced to one lane in each direction. Drivers are advised to use alternate roads or plan for delays. The city is replacing the current bridge structure at that intersection, according to City Public Information Officer Kim Kappel. The project is estimated to take about 2 months. City staff are finalizing traffic management plans, which includes full road closures during some parts of construction. Information will be made available 2 weeks before any road closures, according to the city. The city has been planning to improve this intersection since 2023, according to the city's engagement website, Speak Up Greeley. The improvements are set to include better designs for walking, biking, and driving, as well as new landscaping and artwork. The last major reconstruction of that intersection was back in the 1970s, according to the city. Officials hope the change will create a safer and more appealing space. Time now for a look at Weld County Retail Food Inspection Reports. As you may know, there is a three-tiered grading system. First is pass, meaning the establishment meets fundamental food safety standards. Reinspection required means that safety violations were found. Corrections may have been made, but the rating requires a reinspection to ensure basic food standards are met. And finally, closed means there are significant unsanitary conditions or other imminent health hazards, and the facility has to cease operations until conditions and violations are corrected. The following restaurants and facilities were evaluated during the week of December 26th through January 1st. In Greeley, Bandit Burrito, 614 8th Avenue, pass. Cold Stone Creamery, 4626 Center Place Drive, pass. Ellie's Corner, 920 9th Avenue, pass. Medhoof Market, 715 25th Street, pass. $1.50 a scoop on West 10th Street, pass. Pollo Feliz, 921 36th Avenue, reinspection required. Starbucks, West 9th Street, pass. Sunshine Convenience Store, 9th Avenue, pass. Weld Food Bank, 1108 H Street, pass. In Evans, The Maverick on 37th Street, pass. Murphy USA on 37th Street, pass. And Sabor a Mi Tierra on 23rd Avenue, pass. In Johnstown, Huang Garden, Johnstown Center Drive, pass. J&M VFW Post Club on South 1st Street, pass. Los Rudos Tacos y Hot Dogs, South 1st Street, pass. And We Need Donut on Parish Avenue, pass. And in Windsor, The Lodge at 1600 Pelican Lake Point, Pelican Lakes Point, pass. In business news this morning, the markets are higher on balance, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 188 points, or not quite 0.4% at this reading, and is actually within about 42 points of its all-time record high. We'll see what happens later in the day. The price of benchmark U.S. crude oil was down this morning, down 0.3%, pulling back from sharp gains yesterday when the market reacted to U.S. forces capturing Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro in a weekend raid. Gold prices were up 1%. Silver prices were up almost 5%. They have both notched record prices over the last year amid lingering economic concerns brought on by conflicts and trade wars. And here's a follow-up story. Trump Mobile's golden phone is still nowhere to be found. A golden phone that President Donald Trump's family business promised to release last year remains mysteriously under wraps as the technology industry serves up a glut of new gadgets at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas this week. When the Trump Organization launched a mobile phone service last June, it was supposed to be a stage center for a new smartphone bathed in gold with a $500 price tag, a bargain compared to Apple's latest iPhone models that sell from $8 to $1,200. The newly formed Trump Mobile targeted its T1 phone for an August or September release. What's more, Trump Mobile initially hailed T1 as a device that would be proudly designed and built in the United States for customers who expect the best. But both the T1's shipping date and U.S. manufacturing ambitions gradually began to shift, even as Trump Mobile continues to accept $100 deposits for the device. Not long after announcing the device, Trump Mobile pivoted from describing it as a phone that would be made in the U.S. to framing it as a device that would be proudly American. Trump Mobile's website now touts the T1 as having an American-proud design with no further explanation. Analysts believe the shift stemmed from a recognition that the U.S. lacked the supply chain and other logistics required to make a smartphone for less than $1,000, the same hurdles that made it implausible for Apple to acquiesce to President Trump's demands that the company move its iPhone manufacturing from China and India. Later in the summer, Trump Mobile also became more vague about when the T1 would become available, but still indicated it would be delivered to customers who paid the $100 deposit by the end of last year. Trump Mobile's website continues to list the T1's targeted release date as, quote, later this year. The Trump Organization did not respond to inquiries from the Associated Press about the delays or when the device is now expected to be shipped. The Financial Times recently reported it was told by a customer representative for Trump Mobile that the phone will be shipped in late January and attributed its delayed release to the 43-day shutdown of the federal government last year. Whatever the reason, the T1's ongoing absence from the smartphone market did not come as a surprise to International Data Corp analyst Francisco Geronimo. "We have always been quite skeptical about this phone," Geronimo said. "They're probably finding it's harder to build a phone than they thought it would be. Let's see if this thing comes to life or not." While the T1 has remained in a holding pattern, Trump Mobile has been selling its wireless device for $47.45 per month, the price tied to Donald Trump's title as the 47th and 45th president. For customers looking for a smartphone that they can use sooner rather than later, Trump Mobile is also selling refurbished versions of older iPhones and Samsung's Galaxy models at prices ranging from $370 to $630. Now, from the opinion page, here are some letters to the editor of the Greeley Tribune. First, a letter from Jennifer Montes of Greeley. "The town of Hudson is sleepwalking into a crisis. While their town council remains passive, plans are accelerating to reopen the dormant Hudson Correctional Facility as a GO group-run ICE detention center. We must call this what it is: a for-profit concentration camp that monetizes human suffering. GO Group is a corporation with a track record of allegations of medical neglect and systemic abuse. Why would we welcome a business that stains our community's reputation? More importantly, why is the town council allowing them to bypass the law? Under standard land use principles, any non-conforming use is considered legally abandoned if it sits dormant for a significant period. Since this facility has been vacant since 2014, its legal status as a prison has expired. GO Group should not be allowed to simply turn the lights back on. They must be required to apply for a new special use permit, which would grant the public a right to a hearing. The council's failure to enforce this abandonment rule is a betrayal of Hudson's 1,600 residents. We cannot wait for federal contracts to be signed. I urge our leaders to stop the research phase and immediately enforce our zoning laws to protect our town. Colorado should be a place where families thrive, not where cruelty is sold for a profit." That was a letter to the editor of the Tribune from Jennifer Montes of Greeley. Now, a letter from Andrew Moorhead of Greeley. "To those MAGA faithful who watched the president's recent speech to the nation, it was probably reassurance that their president was unshaken in his pursuit of his program, whatever that may be. It varies from day to day and depends greatly on the position of the last person to whom he talked. For the rest of the nation, it was an opportunity to watch our elected leader repeat a series of false claims, also known as lies, exhibit sociopathic behavior, and continue to display his narcissism, his pathological lying, and outsized ego. These are the forces that drive him. I am a native New Yorker with many years of exposure to the Trump family and expect such behavior from him. But if you don't understand his psychological makeup, you understand almost nothing of importance about him. Trump is president mainly because of the early and undying support he has received from white evangelical Christians and fundamentalists. Not all of them, but most of them. They stand with him to this very day, not on his every utterance, but on the moral arc of his presidency, which is interesting because he has no basic morality or ethics with which to identify. I beseech you to reevaluate your position, that the end justifies the means, and that one can support a truly miserable and amoral human being solely because of a few policies that appeal to you. As the late Rob Reiner wrote for Michael Douglas in the final speech of the film The American President, after 3 years he could assure you that, quote, the presidency is all about character. No truer words were ever said." That was a letter to the editor of the Tribune from Andrew Moorhead of Greeley. We turn now to the obituary page. Esther May Alice, born December 28, 1944, passed away December 25, 2025. Esther grew up in the Barnesville and Greeley areas of Colorado. She married Philip H. Alice on December 21, 1963. During Phil's service in the U.S. Air Force, they lived in Michigan, where they farmed and raised their family. Esther worked as a secretary at Greeley Hospital, Monfort Lamb Plant, ConAgra, and a Greeley pediatrician's office, retiring in 2007. A devoted wife, mother, grandmother, homemaker, gardener, and farmer, Esther always placed family first, whether by blood or by love. Esther is survived by her beloved husband, Philip Alice, her children, Michelle and Andrew and Andrew's wife, Sarah, five grandchildren, Amanda and her husband, Casey Gurney, Sabrina and her husband, Brian Peterson, Aurora and her husband, Daniel Jun, Cassandra and Asher, as well as four great-grandchildren, Kane, Adelin, Lily, and Leland. She is also survived by her sisters, Carol and her husband, Lee Scott, and Margaret and her husband, Jerry Thout, as well as her brother, Steve Long, and his wife, Tammy. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to the Alzheimer's Association. A service is scheduled for Thursday, January 8th, 11 a.m., at Allnut Macy on West 20th Street in Greeley. With heavy hearts, we announce the passing of our beloved father, Richard Beitz, who entered eternal life on December 19, 2025, at the age of 92. Born on June 30, 1933, to Theodore, Ted, and Bertha, Bert Beitz, he grew up and grounded in family, faith, and the values of hard work. As a young boy, he attended Emmaus Lutheran Church, where his Christian foundation was firmly planted. His childhood years in Platteville and Alt, Colorado, working alongside his father on the family farm, shaped his character and inspired his lifelong dream of farming. In 1950, he met the love of his life, Geraldine Jerry Weiss. The two were married in 1953. Together, they built a beautiful life and raised their four children, Richard, Catherine, David, and Timothy, the physician, the teacher, the musician, and the gardener. Their marriage of 68 years stood as a testament to devotion, partnership, and enduring love. After graduating high school, where he lettered in football, he worked as a farmhand at Simpson Farms. Through the recommendation of Mr. Simpson, he began his long career at Mountain Bell. Starting as a lineman, he steadily advanced into management in electronic switching systems, retiring in 1985. Never one to sit idle, he later worked at Miniscribe and even drove trucks transporting harvested beets to the sugar factory. His dream of farming never faded. In 1973, he purchased a small five-acre mini farm near Firestone, Colorado, where he joyfully tended alfalfa and collected tractors with pride. He passed on the lessons he learned in his youth, discipline, perseverance, and the dignity of honest labor, to his children and grandchildren. He was a man of many talents, a true jack of all trades who built his own home, wired its electricity, installed its plumbing, and kept every vehicle running with his own hands. He loved dancing with his wife to their son's polka Dutch hop band, and proudly called himself a Dutch hopper. Above all, he remained steadfast in his faith and unwavering in his devotion to God and family. He is survived by his four children, Richard and his wife Valerie, Catherine Jerome and her husband George, David and his wife Harriet, and Timothy and his wife Debbie. His three sisters, Sylvia, Marilyn, and Dorothy. Sisters-in-law, Marjorie and Sharon. 11 grandchildren, 9 great-grandchildren. He is also remembered by a large extended family and many dear friends. He was preceded in death by his wife, Jerry, his parents, Ted and Bertha, and his sister, Eugenia. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. Verse from 2 Timothy 4, verse 7 and 8. A memorial service followed by a luncheon reception will be held at 10 a.m. on January 10th, 2025. That's this Saturday at Trinity Lutheran Church, 30,000 35th Avenue in Greeley. Perry Earl Pepler, age 69, of Eaton, passed away peacefully on December 24th, 2025, in Eaton. He was born April 9th, 1956, in Greeley, to Harvey and Ella Miller Pepler. After graduating from Platte Valley High School in 1974, Perry attended Western State College, where he was a member of the university's wrestling team. He later continued his education at Northeastern Junior College before completing his degree at the University of Northern Colorado, where he earned a bachelor's degree in industrial arts. During his college years, Perry met the love of his life, Marla Brinkman. On January 26, 1980, in Greeley, they joined their lives in marriage, beginning a love story rooted in faith, love, and grace that would carry them through a lifetime. Faith guided every part of Perry's life and was the foundation on which he built his family, work, and relationships. Raised farming alongside his father, he felt called to work the land and instill in his boys the same faith, work ethic, and values that had shaped his own life. When Perry wasn't on a tractor, a truck, or a piece of farm equipment, he could often be found enjoying the outdoors. A true thrill seeker, he had a passion for boating, off-roading, snowmobiling, riding his Harley, and most recently, pickleball. No matter the season, Perry found joy in sharing his love of adventure, friendly competition, and faith with those around him. Perry is survived by his loving wife of 45 years, Marla Pepler, his son Preston Pepler, his wife Michelle, and Price Pepler and his wife Brooke, and his grandchildren, Bo, Carver, Max, Colden, and Ty. He is also survived by his parents-in-law, Marvin and Ann Brinkman, his brother-in-law, Mark Brinkman, and his niece, Sierra Brinkman. He also leaves behind a large extended family and many dear friends who will miss him greatly. He was preceded in death by his parents, Harvey and Ella Pepler, and three grandchildren lost through miscarriage. Memorial contributions in Perry's name may be made to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital or Generations Church in care of the Lighthouse Family Mortuary in Greeley. A memorial service is being held today at 10 a.m. at Generations Church in Greeley. Patrick Wardell passed away peacefully in his sleep on December 15th in Greeley. He was 60 years old. Patrick was born in St. Paul, Minnesota on June 24, 1965, to parents Marvin and Rosalie Wardell. He spent his early years in Cheyenne, Wyoming, attending Central High School where he played football. Patrick proudly served in the U.S. Army in the 1980s and eventually settled in Colorado, living most of his life in Greeley. A bear of a man at 6 feet 4 inches tall and 285 pounds, Patrick was always the gentle giant. All who knew him well described him as kind and gentle, with always a kind word for everyone. Patrick had survived cancer 4 times and suffered a stroke in 2024. But instead of expressing any bitterness or resentment about the repeated battles with cancer, Patrick used that as motivation to enjoy his life and spread love and kindness to others wherever he went. As he adopted exercise and a healthier diet for himself, he encouraged family members and friends to adopt healthier lifestyles along with him. Patrick was an avid Denver Broncos fan. He had a passion for playing poker and writing poetry. He was a published poet, whose collections of poems include Patrick's Chocolate Cake for Dinner Diet and 36 Grooves on the Way to Love, a book of Valentine's poetry and prose. He was writing another collection of poems at the time of his death. Consistent with everything else about Patrick, he wrote from the heart. His poems are mostly about love, peace, dreaming, believing, and spreading joy. As he said in one of his poems, "If you love instead of hate, you always win." Patrick was a familiar, friendly face around Greeley, Loveland, and surrounding communities for a couple of decades, as a sales representative at events and stores for the Greeley Tribune, Loveland Reporter Herald, and other regional publications. He will be greatly missed by all who had the great pleasure of working with him. Patrick also worked at the Northgate Village King Supers on 10th Street in Greeley for the past several years, where co-workers and customers enjoyed Patrick's consistently friendly, kind, and easygoing demeanor. Patrick was preceded in death by his brothers, Michael Wardell and David Wardell. He is survived by his loving wife, Kathy Wardell, who will dearly miss her big teddy bear. Patrick is also survived by his daughter, Jennifer Wardell, his previous wife, Michelle Bryant, and his sisters, Jody Albert and Mary Brown, as well as 8 nieces and nephews. A celebration of Patrick's life will be held on Saturday, January 10th at 11 a.m. at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on 23rd Avenue in Greeley. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the American Cancer Society. Or, in Patrick's memory, please pay forward some love and kindness to others, as he did. Maybe even read a love poem to someone you care about. Perhaps one of Patrick's poems. Mary Elizabeth Mayfield Schott, age 91, was born October 18, 1934, and passed away December 17, 2025, at Grace Point Senior Center in Greeley. She was formerly of Kersey, Colorado. Mary was born to Emmett and Marie McGrew Mayfield in Greeley, but was raised by her mother and her second husband, Robert Dunkel. She grew up in Kersey with her family. After graduating from Kersey High School in 1953, Mary began work as a telephone operator for Mountain Bell. On March 14, 1954, Mary married Albert Schott at St. John's Lutheran Church in Greeley. She moved with Al to California, where he served in the U.S. Navy. In 1956, after Al was honorably discharged, they moved back to Kersey to the family farm and raised their 3 children, Jane, Ken, and Shari. After raising her children, Mary worked at Montford Portion Foods as a meat cutter for several years until her retirement. During retirement, Mary and Al attended many high school and Navy reunions. She enjoyed attending many events for her grandchildren, cooking, sewing, crafting, and going up the hill to Blackhawk with her sisters. Mary was a dedicated and faithful member of the St. John's Church throughout her lifetime. She loved her family fiercely and taught them all the love of Jesus, the importance of tradition, and the value of hard work. Mary is survived by her children, Jane Chittenden of Kersey, Ken Schott and his wife Diane of Greeley, Sherry Niebauer and her husband Dwayne of Kersey, 11 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild, and her brother, Robert Dunkel, Jr. She was preceded in death by her husband of 70 years, Albert, her parents, brothers, sisters, grandson Dustin Niebauer, and son-in-law Al Chittenden. A visitation is being held today, 9 a.m., at St. John's United Church of Christ, services at 10, reception at the church following the interment at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Memorial gifts may be made to the St. John's United Church of Christ in care of Adamson's Life Celebration Home. Our time is now up for this week. We again thank you for joining us and hope you found the preceding hour productive and useful, maybe even interesting. My name is Mike Fearberg. I want to wish you a happy new year, one of the last to do so, and look forward to reading to you again next week.
The content featured in this recording may not reflect the views of AfterSight or the presenter. For questions, concerns, or editorial feedback regarding the Greeley Tribune, please contact them directly at letters@greeleytribune.com or call 970-352-0211.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.